Welcome to the Product Podcast by Product School. Here's a preview of today's talk.
Now, in closing, I want to leave you with one of my other favorite quotes. And it says, "Don't judge each day by the harvest that you reap, but instead by the seeds that you plant." Because networking can kind of be a weird game. You can one day not have any harvest to reap, but if you focus just on planting seeds and planting seeds and planting seeds, I strongly believe that you will reap a harvest. It may not be today, it may not be tomorrow, but it will come back. And so this is another thing that I remind myself on days where I feel down and no one's emailing me back, I just make more investments into my network. And then what I found is that probably 3 days, 5 days is the turnaround cycle to when things happen.
In this podcast, we teach our listeners valuable lessons about product management and transform them into thinking like a product manager. We teach product management, coding, data analytics, and blockchain in 14 campuses worldwide, including San Francisco, New York, and Seattle. You can find more information at productschool.com. Join our Slack community of 25,000 professionals to network and stay tuned for our upcoming events.
Is I get to talk about something that has really become near and dear to my heart. And really, that is how to network. And for reference, for a long time, I was thinking about it and doing it completely, completely wrong. It wasn't until I started taking a product manager's approach to networking that I started measuring and quantifying the results. And because I took that approach of this experimentation mindset and documentation mindset, I've captured some really interesting learnings in my own journey to become a better networker. And I've had some really good successes along the way, but I've also had some colossal failures. I want to share those learnings with you guys tonight. The reason I want to do that is because I want this conversation to be a catalyst for you to realize that you also have to level up your networking skills. Why is that important? Well, honestly, it's vitally important for you to be able to get to where you want in your career. You need to be a better networker to do that. I'm embarrassed to say this, but for quite a long time, the thought of networking was something that was below me. You see, I thought that I was smart and that I could do good work, and those two things alone would get me ahead in life. And further, I also thought that people who networked a little bit too much did it because they weren't smart and that they couldn't do good work, and that's why they had to network. Completely wrong. So sadly, for the first 6 years of my professional career, and really if you think about it, a lot of school years before that, this is the mindset that I operated from. And I did this for way too long. And at first, things were fine. You know, as a matter of fact, everything was swimmingly well. But then it wasn't. And really, in that moment where things were crumbling around me, that's when I realized the terrible mistake that I had made by neglecting to network for such a long time. Luckily, in the past 5 years, this has all changed. Really, out of necessity, I've slowly and methodically developed a very different mindset about how the world really works. I now believe that by making small investments, small and consistent investments into my network, that in the long run, it will have outsized returns back for me. And that's what really I want to talk about tonight. And I would love, love, love to convince you in the next hour to change your mindset and have as much conviction about this as I do. The problem is that it doesn't work exactly that way. So think about all the times that you've been given good advice, whether it's, hey, drink water right when after you wake up, make sure you read a book every day, not read a book every day, but read every day, or go for a walk every day. Just because you know what you should do doesn't mean anything. You actually have to practice it. And so I want everyone in this room tonight to think about this talk more along the lines of medicine. and not along the lines of an elixir. So medicine is something that you have to take and you have to continuously take to get better. That's the same thing with networking. You have to practice and continue to practice it to get better. An elixir is some sort of magic potion that you take once and overnight you become this better version of yourself. This is not an elixir. This talk is going to be all along the lines of medicine. So with that said, the good news is over the years, I've been methodically developing and refining this playbook on what I think really works and what doesn't work. And I want to share that all with you tonight. And there are tips and tricks in there, no matter if you're just beginning to network, or if you've been dabbling for a while and you want to take it to the next level, or you consider yourself a pro and you're just really here to refresh some of the basics. But again, just to mention, the bad news with this is having the playbook alone, it's not going to bring about any change. You really have to put this into practice. And so I think I've beat the dead horse enough. And so let's move forward. There are two definitions, two words that I'm going to bounce back and forth with tonight. And so let's take some time to actually define them. The two words are community and as well as network. And so first, let's start with community. What is a community? Well, to me, a community is a group of people who collect, who get together, and who form together because of some common interest. And really, that common interest can be anything. It could be running. It could be a love of a certain type of movie. It could be product management. It really doesn't matter, but there has to be some common interest. If there isn't a common interest, it's just a random smattering of people. Now, people come into communities because of common interests, but what's really, really cool is what happens next. Most people in a community will have similar shared values. And so, for instance, I'm a runner, and that means that I treat my Friday evenings and my Saturday mornings differently than a lot of my non-running friends. Now, if you're a runner and I'm a runner, something really, really cool happens. We develop this sense of trust, and that's because we have shared values. I know what you believe, and you know what I believe. And when that happens, trust starts to develop. And trust is super, super important, because when there comes a time of need, when you need help, we, at the end of the day, are social animals, and we help those who we trust. So even though people come into communities and find communities because of the common interests, they really stay because of the shared values that lead to the trust, that lead to help. A couple other things to mention about communities. First, every single person in this room tonight belongs to multiple communities. It's never a stagnant list. It'll always ebb and flow based on where you live, what interests you have, and where you are in your phase of life. I mention that so that you can think about community, something that you can enter and exit at will. Now, communities exist in different places. Some exist purely online, while others exist only in the real world. And a lot of them also have a hybrid state. I only mention this because it has different, you'll have different approaches when you're breaking into different communities based on where they primarily collect some projects to do. This isn't actually the exciting part of the story, but what is these 300 people who were all jammed into classrooms together. You see, most of us were not from New York City, and so it was very natural that on evenings and on weekends, we'd hang out together. I was smart enough to get myself onto a bunch of these email lists, and the email lists were really the secret to find out what all these different cliques within our analyst class were doing. So that was the gift. The curse was the exact same thing. Because I was given access to this network, I didn't feel like there was a need to work at it more and to really build my network. You see, I always saw the steady flow of activities that were going on. And yeah, I participated and I had a lot of fun with people, but I didn't make an investment in. I didn't plan events. I didn't bring my friends to events. And I certainly didn't take the time to really build one-on-one relationships with the people along the way. Now, fast forward about 6 years, and I've decided that I want to leave Goldman to go start my own company. Part of the confidence that I had to go out and do my own company was this belief that I had a strong network at my back. I distinctly remember when that reality got shattered. So, it's pitch black outside. and I'm startled awake, and my eyes are so tired, but my mind is already starting to pick up. And feeling really disoriented, I rolled over in bed and picked up my phone and looked at the time, and it was 3 in the morning. Now, normally, if you do this, you just put your phone down and you go back to sleep, and then you wake up a few hours later. But for me, I knew that I wasn't going to fall asleep that night. Because you see, as soon as I woke up, I felt this like stress and anxiety just rushing through my body. And really, it was a reminder that I just could not get my company off the ground. And if it just happened once or twice, that'd be okay. But since I had left Goldman to go launch this company, it was happening more and more and more often. Now, I left Goldman to go launch this company called Runtourage. And the idea behind Runtourage was that it was an iPhone app that would help you find training partners when you were training for like a marathon. So the idea is, I'm running the New York City Marathon, you're training for the New York City Marathon. We don't know each other, but what if the app could somehow connect us so that we could run together? In the end, we'd both probably be off better. Now, the idea, maybe it was okay. And I hope a lot of people have told you this. And if not, I'm going to pop your cherry. Because really, ideas are cheap. It's all about the execution. And my stress and my anxiety were because I just did not know how to execute. To make matters worse, I set aside a bunch of money to go bootstrap this company, Runtourage, until I could eventually get some traction and then go raise money. But I was blowing through my money way faster than I had expected. So that was causing a lot of stress. And to make matters even worse, every single day, I'm getting a lesson from the School of Hard Knocks just how hard it is to do anything, and especially to do something when you're trying to do it alone. I remember laying in bed, scrolling through my phone, looking through Facebook, looking at LinkedIn, and trying to find someone who could help me out. And I realized at that point in time that there wasn't anyone that I could really reach out to. I mean, sure, yeah, I could reach out to my friend for some moral support, and they'd be like, yeah, man, you got it, you can do this. But really, I needed much more help than that. And the sad realization at that point in time was that I didn't have that network. I didn't have that network because I had neglected my own network. I hadn't made investments into it for such a long time. And the saddest reality is at that point in time, when you know you need your network, but you haven't invested, it's too late. So let this be a lesson, right? If there's nothing else that you take away tonight, take away the fact that you cannot neglect your network. You absolutely can't. And so you should probably be asking a question in your head, well, when's the best time to start? And I argue that the best time to start is yesterday. It was yesterday. But unless you can build a time machine and go back, today's the next best day to start. Let me give you an example of how you can do that. And let me show you a better way of doing things. So, Virginia was a friend, or is a friend, of a friend. And at the time that I was off doing Runtourage, honestly, we didn't know each other that well. We would have bumped into each other at group settings and hung out, but honestly, I hadn't taken any time to really get to know who she was. But that didn't stop Virginia from really going out of her way and helping me out. You see, somewhere around this time, she must have figured out that I was really just flopping around and didn't know what I was doing. And in parallel, she had met up with some ex-coworkers who were at American Express, and they had moved over to a new group and they were hiring as fast as they could. So out of the blue, Virginia sent me this email. I said, hey, hadn't talked to you in a while. There's this cool thing happening. It seems like it's up your space. Would you like an introduction to this team? And I was really just blown away by this because, you know, I didn't really know Virginia that well. You know, I thought about the situation of this introduction, and really, it would have been much easier if she didn't make the introduction. She had to go out of her way to send me an email, make sure things were okay, then send an email to her coworkers and make things were okay, and then put her social capital on the line by making this introduction. But she did it anyways, and she did it without any expectation of anything in return. She just went out of her way to help me out. Now, that gave me a foot in the door to really just meet these new people. And ultimately, that led to me getting my first product manager title at American Express. I'm fast forwarding through the whole sort of frantic rush to learn and to be able to prepare for that interview. But the point of the matter is that she went out of her way to help me out. And that small little gesture on her part opened up a huge door for me. So the lesson that I want you to take away from this is, instead of neglecting your network like I had, do something like Virginia. Seek to add value into the network, right? But I don't mean that you should become Mother Teresa and just like commit 12 hours a day to do this. Keep it small and sustainable. So here's a way that you can try this out at home for yourself. The next time that you come across a good article, podcast, book, any piece of content, instead of just closing it out and going about your day, think about one person in your network who could potentially benefit from it. And then send them that thing, right? This is how easy it is. You say, hey, person, read this article, thought of you, add the link, hope all is well. Just send it off. I think if you actually go through and do something as simple as this, you'll be surprised what happens. And as a matter of fact, if you do something like this, I want you to get in touch with me and tell me how it goes. Because for me, as I've done this, it's opened up coffee chats, introductions, and just doors that I couldn't have thought possible. Something simple as sending a link to a friend. All right, as we move along, let me now share an intermediate level mistake that I made. So after I got the job at Amex, it became apparent very, very quickly that I didn't actually know what a product manager did. I thought I knew, but there was a lot to learn before I could consider myself good at my job. And so I started reading as many books as I can, articles, podcasts, you name it, I would try to consume it. And as a matter of fact, I even got my manager to pay for and send me to a part-time product management course, very similar to what product school offers. And I loved the course so much and had such a good experience, I then went back to help teach it. And this is all because I wanted just to learn as much about product as I could. I tell you all of this because the more I learned about how to do product the right way, the more it forced me to reflect back on all my failures with Rentourage. You see, the classic mistake that I made with Rentourage was I had an idea and I decided I was going to go build a product and then I was going to go test it. The problem with this is that the app was really dead on, it was just dead when it got into the app store and there was nothing that I could do. So, at best, I had this vague notion of the type of people who would want to use the app, who would get value out of the app, and who would ultimately refer it to their friends. But this was only an assumption and it was never validated. And it really, really irked me because deep down, I always still believed that there was something there with accountability. And so as I read more about product and learned how to do it, really the approach that I've taken is always to go with a hypothesis-driven model. Define a hypothesis of how you think the world works, find some experiment to validate that, and then refine and keep going. So I developed this hypothesis that, one, most people have probably had a good experience with accountability at some point in their life. Maybe it was a study group, a sports team, music, a band, or something like that. Most people have probably had some experience. My second hypothesis was that most people were open to the idea of accountability buddies. But my third hypothesis was that most people did not actively have accountability buddies in their life for whatever goals they were working on. Now, really, I would have loved to try to figure out all these product things at work at Amex, but at the time, the company just wasn't ready for it. We were in a waterfall state moving over to Agile, and all the things that I was learning about was like lean startup way on the other end of the spectrum. So I decided I would pick up another side project and really teach myself how to do lean product and do it the right way. That has ultimately evolved into what I'm doing now with Tribe of Five. But at the time, it was just some vague idea of what could be. And as a side note, just to give you a heads up what Tribe of Five is, Tribe of Five is an accountability app that helps you make significant progress on your personal goals. Think about all the things that you know you should be doing, reading, journaling, meditating, all these things, but that you probably aren't. What we believe is that if we can pair you up with like-minded people who have the same goal, collectively you will have a much better experience and much higher probability of actually sticking with it. And so at the time, I had formed this loose idea around accountability and what I could do with it. But I wanted to go out and validate, because remember, the mistake that I made with Runtourage is I had an idea, and then I built a product, and then I tried to go test it. Well, I decided what I needed to really do was flip the entire order around. So what I would first do is go find people, then I would validate the problem, and at some point in time, I would build a product. And so what I needed to do first and foremost was to find people who were somewhat into accountability. Reddit seemed like a very natural place that I could go. I'd been lurking on Reddit for years and years, and I knew that there was a subreddit called Get Motivated Buddies. People go on this subreddit to post that they need an accountability buddy for studying, for losing weight, whatever you may think of. And then there are people who respond and say, I'll be your accountability buddy. So I knew that there was an area potentially that I could tap into. And at first, what I did is I spent a lot of time and I diligently read people's posts, and then I would engage with them. And I would ask them questions about what kind of accountability buddies they were looking for and why they were looking for accountability buddies. And guess what? It worked. A number of those people responded to me, and we had an engaging conversation. And when I told them about the idea of Tribe of Five, some people seemed to get it. Some people went to my landing page. Some people even signed up on the subscribe button at the bottom. And a few of those people even agreed to be a part of a beta test with no product in mind. And so I ended up running a bunch of MVPs over email. And what we did is we ran these 30-day accountability challenges. We did a 30-day reading challenge. We did a 30-day gratitudes challenge. We did a 30-day exercise challenge. You name it, I was trying to do it. And I learned so much from this, but then I made my mistake. I started not thinking about quality, and I started getting greedy, and I started thinking about quantity. I was thinking, well, if this works and I just turn the engine up, won't I just drive a lot more people onto my page? And won't that help me really get farther ahead? Well, in trying to go for quantity and not quality, I ended up getting myself banned on Reddit. Because what I started doing was I started creating these templated messages, and I would just blast them out to everyone who posted on the Get Motivated Buddies thread. And then I would go to another subreddit and I'd do the same thing. And I don't know if you are aware, Reddit has this thing called shadow banning. And shadow banning, in my mind, is actually worse than a regular ban. Because with a regular ban, you know you've been banned. But with a shadow ban, everything looks okay to you. You can send messages to people. You can comment on people. You can upvote and downvote stuff. But for the rest of the world, you're a ghost. All those things that you did don't make it out anymore. So with this profile that I had built, and at first I was getting all this good karma off of it, now I had completely burned myself. I burned my bridge. All because I started thinking too much about quantity. So, as you can probably imagine, in my mind, quality always trumps quantity, all right? And especially when you think about networking, the secret is not quantity. It is quality of interactions and the quality of the connections that you can build. That's what really leads you forward. And so that's the lesson here. Think about quality. Don't think about quantity.
If you have enjoyed the episode so far, check out our upcoming live events at productschool.com/events. Use the promo code PRODUCTPODCAST in all caps to get a free ticket to the next event in your city.
Now, here's a better way of doing things. My friend Shaw, he is a much better networker than I am. In fact, he's so good that I've just started taking parts of his playbook and using it as my own. Back in January, he reached out to me, and it seemed very random. And he said, hey, hadn't seen you in a while. How are things? By the way, I have a ticket to an upcoming meetup event where Biz Stone, the co-founder of Twitter, is presenting. Do you want to go? And I don't know about you, but I don't get invited to these things every day. And so, of course, I was like, yeah, man, I definitely want to go to that. Well, we went to the event together, and we caught up on what was going on in our lives, and I hadn't seen him for a little while. And then we listened to Biz Stone, and it gave us some fodder for conversation. And on our walk home, as we talked more, we realized that we had a lot of more common interests than we previously realized. And we had a lot of the same hopes and dreams of where we were trying to head professionally. So naturally, it was a very easy opportunity for us to talk about how we could help each other out. So that was back in January. Then, in February, I returned the favor. I was going to a meetup event, and I thought, hey, Shah would probably like this, so I invited him. And we repeated that process again. Then, in March, I ended up spending probably a half day at his office because he was working on this new project, and it was tricking him up. And I had worked on a very similar project in the past. And so I went in, and we whiteboarded, and we talked about what we tried, our approaches, what we learned along the way. And think about that. That all sort of came about because of one email that he sent me in January to invite me to a meetup event. How cool is that, right? And so I asked him about this a little while ago, and I was like, well, so how long have you been doing this, and what have been the results? And he's like, this is just a much, much better approach. First and foremost, typically when you catch up with someone, you go and grab beers. But there's only so much conversation, and that kind of gets dry unless you're like really, really good. But by going to an event, you can kind of take a break in the middle, you have more fodder for conversation, and he's just seen a whole different set of results. So I also preach this too, and I do this too now. Go for quality, don't go for quantity. If you have ever heard of Paul Graham, you'll know his saying, do things that don't scale. And if you don't, you really should Google this. Paul Graham is really one of the godfathers of the startup space, and he's involved with Y Combinator and just a really amazing writer. And so he wrote this entire article, but he's basically saying, like, don't try to scale before you're ready. Go and keep doing things that don't scale. And for me, when I think about networking, it's exactly what Shah was doing. Because the whole time, he didn't go and try to talk to a bunch of people. We just focused on each other the whole time. If I put this another way, what I'm really trying to say is focus on relationships and don't focus on transactions. You got to play the long game. When it comes to networking, if you try to think about it as a transaction, it's not going to work out in your favor. So here's an idea of being able to try this out for yourself. Simply put, the next time that you are going to a meetup event, don't go alone. Send it out to a friend and see if they want to go with you. At best, they say, yeah, sure, that's cool. And then you form a new relationship off of that and you deepen a relationship. And at worst, they say, sorry, I can't go. But that's okay too. Because if you end up at a meetup event by yourself, this is what you should probably do. Instead of focusing on meeting a lot of people, focus very carefully on meeting one or two people. And focus on having some deeper level conversations and connections so you have a reason to then further it. I've certainly made this mistake on the other end where I go to a meetup and I'm frantically just trying to meet every single person I can and so I can add them on LinkedIn. And then I go home and I looked at these people I've added and I realize I don't know anything about them. I don't really have a reason to further connect with them. And so then it kind of just becomes dead weight on my LinkedIn. So that's my advice here. Now, I'm just going to talk about an advanced level mistake that I made. I ended up losing a friend because I tried to be too interesting. Now, I don't know if you can tell, but Tribe of Five is something that I'm really passionate and I just really, really like thinking about and talking about. And I mistakenly made the assumption that other people would be as interested as I am. And so I thought the more interesting that I could be, the more I could tell people about the vision and the progress and the insights that we were making, the more people would become my super fans. But actually, what happened was the exact opposite. And I failed to see the signs that I was doing this with a friend, and he no longer responds to my emails. And I've tried 3 or 4 different times to re-engage, but cold silence. So I'll leave his name out of it, but ever since I told Tim about the idea behind Tribe of Five, he seemed to be on board. He seemed to get what I was doing, and he was also pretty supportive. He was like, yeah, man, this seems cool. You should keep on doing it. And as a matter of fact, he even participated in one of our recent beta tests. But here's where I went wrong. See, for the past year or so, Tim and I would catch up once in a while and get coffee. And I'd always ask him, hey, what have you been up to? And honestly, he'd been up to some really cool things, and he would tell me about it. But while he was telling me, the little monkey mind inside here, all it was saying was, when do I get to talk? When do I get to talk? When do I get to talk about Tribe? And when it was my turn, oh, I would turn up the floodgates and I would talk and talk and talk. And when he would politely ask me some questions, I interpreted that to mean he almost got it. And all I needed to do was just to turn up my interesting meter a little bit more and a little bit more, and I would convert him. Don't do that. I cringe thinking about what I did, because what I was really doing was just saying me, 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 me. Kind of like this girl here taking selfies. And you probably have people in your social networks that all they do is take selfies. And I probably think that you're like, all right, I just got to get rid of this person. They're not really doing it for me. That's what I did for my advanced level mistake. I was trying to be too interesting. And so my lesson here is that the more you try to be interesting, the more it actually works against you. And you may be able to dominate a conversation, and you may be able to say everything that you wanted to say out of that conversation, but the more interesting you try to be, the more it's actually going to backfire. Let me tell you a better way of doing things. So Steve is a prominent VC in New York City. He's been in the game for 10 plus years, and in that time, he's really built a good reputation and a solid personal brand. A couple of months ago, a fellow entrepreneur and friend of mine emailed me because Steve was launching a side project that had a lot of overlap with what Tribe of Five was trying to do. So you see, Steve was also in the self-improvement space, and he had this idea of bringing together a community of people who really wanted to change their habits. And his idea is if he could bring them together and give them the tools and the support along the way, they'd be able to sustain these changes and get better and better and better. And overall, that community would grow. It was going to start in New York City, but then it was going to expand out from there. So when I found out about this, naturally, I was very curious and I wanted to get in touch with Steve to go grab coffee and see what he was up to. Now, I'm pretty certain that every single day, Steve gets multiple emails from founders who want to pitch their project and who want to get coffee with him. And just by doing a quick back of the envelope calculation, you're going to see that he probably says no to the majority of these chats. There just aren't enough hours in a day. And if you know anything about VCs, they are prolific for not taking cold introductions. They really want things to come through their network because along the way, it's going to get vetted. And that means that they're not going to waste their time and they're not going to get super weird stuff. So how did I then cold email him and then set up coffee and have an hour and a half productive session and leave this session with him proactively saying, hey, I want to introduce you to other founders in my network? The secret of what I did is the exact opposite of what I did before. Instead of trying to be interesting, I tried my hardest to be interested, right? It's a subtle difference, but I was interested. So when I cold emailed him, I made it clear that I was interested in his project. Now, obviously, I gave a little overview that I was doing a project that was similar, but I focused the attention and said, hey, I really want to learn what you're doing, what you're up to. And I demonstrated to him that I had done my homework and I knew why I was reaching out to him. And simply put, all I did was I read a bunch of his blogs and I extracted similar values that we had. Remember I was talking about earlier communities, similar values, trust. I used that as a way to get the coffee chat. Now, he responded and I was pretty surprised by that, to be honest. But we went and had coffee. And when we were sitting there, I could tell that he was a little reserved in the beginning. And probably he was trying to suss me out. He was probably thinking, is this guy really interested or is he fake interested? But I kept that in mind. Be interested, not interesting. And I asked him a lot of good questions about his project. And he started warming up. And as a matter of fact, he then pulled out his phone and he went through line by line all of the learnings that he had for his project. And we compared and contrasted what was different and what was the same with the project that I was working on, Tribe of Five. It got to the point where I was so interested in what he was doing that he became interested in what I was doing. So he started flipping it around and asking me questions about what was Tribe, what was I trying to do, what was my vision, where was I trying to go, how did I see the world. And so by me not trying to be interesting, he became interested in me. And so we had an hour and a half back and forth session that was really, really cool. And I left and I was feeling just on top of the world. But as we walked out, he casually mentioned, he said, hey, do you know this other founder? And this guy's in the same space as both of us, but he's way, way ahead. He's like been in the game for about probably 7-10 years with his business. And I told Steve, I was like, yeah, I mean, I sort of know him. I follow his blog and I know his company, but like, I don't really have any connection to him. I didn't know where Steve was going with this, but he's just like, yeah, yeah, you guys should meet. You guys should meet. And I was like, all right, whatever. The next day, He warm intros the both of us. And this is so cool because me and this other guy, we then exchange a bunch of emails. And he shares a whole bunch of insights and tips and considerations. I mean, this is stuff that's really priceless from all of his learnings with me. And all of this started because, you know, I was really focused on being interested and not interesting. And so that's the lesson. That's the real lesson here. Be interested and not, and don't try to be interesting. This seems really, really easy, but I consider it an advanced level technique because I bet you if you actually audit any conversation you have with your friend, you'll realize that you're not as interested in the meeting. You're trying to be more interesting. So if you want to try this at home, I recommend that you keep the stakes low at first. Try this out with a friend and go and keep in mind, be interested, not interesting. And what I found seems to work pretty well is something like a 70-30, 80-20 mix of being interested and versus interesting. You can't go 100% because if you do, that's super, super weird. And so if you don't believe me, you can try it. But I think 70-30 is a good mix. So first, try this with friends, get comfortable with it. Try it with coworkers, get comfortable with it, and then try it with strangers, right? Don't do this the first time with strangers because it could really be kind of weird too. The caveat to all of this is 2 points. One, you actually have to be interested. You can't be fake interested because people will sniff that out really, really quickly. And then the second point that I'll make here is that in order for this to work, you have to put in the work ahead of time. You can't show up and be like, so who are you and what do you do and what are you all about? Put in the work. That shows people that you're interested. That's proof. That's evidence along the way. But if you do, I think that it can have a pretty cool result. So we've gone through my journey of mistakes and successes. If you remember back when I was a rookie, I completely neglected my network. But what I learned to do was to make small, consistent investments in. And then the further along that I got, I realized, well, first I started off with quality, but then I quickly pivoted and tried to go for quantity. And that slapped me in the face and reminded me, no. Quality is the way to go. And then further, remember, I lost a friend because I was trying to be too interesting. So the remedy to that is to be interested. Now, I highlight this here because I think that there are probably another 10, 15, 20 levels that I can improve on in my own networking. I plan to move this forward and keep on going down this path. I expect to make some epic, epic mistakes, but I expect to also learn a lot along the way and figure out how to keep getting better. My hope is that one of these stories tonight resonates with you and is something that you can take home and try out for yourself. Now, in closing, I want to leave you with one of my other favorite quotes. And it says, "Don't judge each day by the harvest that you reap, but instead by the seeds that you plant." Because networking can kind of be a weird game. You can one day not have any harvest to reap. But if you focus just on planting seeds and planting seeds and planting seeds, I strongly believe that you will reap a harvest. It may not be today, it may not be tomorrow, but it will come back. And so this is another thing that I remind myself on days where I feel down and no one's emailing me back, I just make more investments into my network. And then what I found is that probably 3 days, 5 days is the turnaround cycle to when things happen. All right. I wanted to leave you with my contact information because I hope some of you will try out some of these techniques. And again, I really, really want you to get in touch with me if you do. I want you to share your story, tell me what works, and I'm sure you also have some techniques that I've never even thought of. So share those too. Let's help each other get better. And if there's a small group of people who take this away and say, I really have to ramp up my networking, let's create a little group together. Let's keep each other accountable. So if there's a small group that you want to try a 30-day, let's call it a 30-day networking challenge, where every day you're going to commit to do something small to invest in your network, get in touch. We can set this up and I'll run it for us. And I guarantee you over 30 days, you're going to be like, whoa, that was pretty cool. I also just want to leave you with the Tribe of Five website in case you want to follow along in our journey as we build and grow. All right. And with that, I will flip it over and take any questions you guys have. Thank you. Don't be shy. Any questions? Start us off.
Definitely have a method to have, yes, thank you for that. You definitely have flushed out a method that works for you as far as networking. Mm-hmm. I can see how that can work for me and countless other people. What I worry about is, do you ever feel that when you're using these techniques, the person on the other end is probably thinking, oh, he must have just went through some sort of networking trainings? And if that's the case, how do you get that out of your head? Because chances are that's just in your head.
Yeah.
So how? Any advice for that?
Yeah, I think that fundamentally, and it's a really good question. Fundamentally, you have to have some reason why you're out networking. I think the people who go out and network and they're not sure why they're at a particular event and they're just trying to shake hands and build people onto their LinkedIn network, the other person can be like, all right, this is kind of feeling weird. But if you're there, whether it's you're trying to change careers, change jobs, meet interesting people, the real connection that you can make with people is incredible. And when you bridge that connection and you talk, figure out what your common interests are, and then you talk about, figure out what your value systems are and where you're trying to go, I think people really open up in a very different level. So I haven't had that kind of feedback where people are like, ooh, is this like a dating school? But yeah, it's a good consideration that in the beginning to just to make sure you know why you're out there.
Yeah. That's more important.
Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, the lessons learned and don't do this makes a lot of sense. I'm curious, as a product manager, I sense like a lot of, like you just mentioned it again with LinkedIn, it's sort of like the double-edged sword that it is.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a tool that you've built, or is there a better way of tracking, or you know, somewhere between a Rolodex and LinkedIn?
Mm-hmm.
Because there is, like, I mean, at this point, I'd have to like cull out all that, you know, because you do. At some point, everyone has tried to get like 100,000 followers. That's like what we're like trained to do.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Well, because that number is so apparent, and you just want to like keep on going up.
Right. Well, it's that hooked. Yeah. I mean, it's just the behavior model that you just hooked into.
Yeah.
So, I mean, LinkedIn is still useful and you still need it, but is there something that you sort of migrated to in LinkedIn sort of as like a reference point, or
yeah,
is there a tool?
Yeah, that's a really good question as well. I've, in my own journey of trying to build out Tribe of Five, I've realized that it's so important for me to just track who I've reached out to, what I reached out to them about, and I tried out these various CRMs. But I ended up figuring out that a spreadsheet is the best solution for me. And so literally on my spreadsheet, one column is the people, one is the last time we connected, one column is the next time we connected. And if it's blank, I'm always trying to think about like, what's the thing that we could go to? And I have a column that I think is the most important column, which is how can I help this person? What's something that I can do to help them? So in conversations, as we're talking, you might say like, hey, you know, like I'm trying to think about this new company that I'm going to, and I'll put that in there. And it seems kind of like creepy, but I just don't have a good memory. And so I'd rather not let all those things fall through. And so I put them in there and I just go through that. And every single day I go through that and I figure out one small thing, two small things that I can do to help. And I found that
manually. No,
yeah.
I don't mean that like, but that's funny. Like we do, we like say it like with a non-negative connotation, but yeah, it's
absolutely.
You create your own database.
Yeah, there's a decent CRM that I came across called Streaks, and it integrates right into your Gmail. But then it's like $50 a month, and I was like, it's doing the same thing that I'm doing on a spreadsheet. And right now I'm being scrappy. It's like, I'll take that $50 and plow it somewhere else. So yeah, what do you use though?
So I guess I'm just a few steps behind you. I've looked at every single personal CRM.
Mm-hmm.
Played around with Close, which sounds great because it mm-hmm. aggregates all of your like social and all that stuff I don't want to be checking into,
yeah.
you know, a line of communication for me to follow up with somebody.
Yeah.
But right now I'm looking at Airtable to basically build my own database because it is.
Yeah.
Like nothing is simple enough,
yeah.
efficient enough,
yeah.
everything has all these bells and whistles, and everything's built around that CRM model of sales funneling.
Yeah.
Which is back to whichever slide it was. It's like it's not transactional. Relationship is organic and it just feels wrong. It doesn't fit.
Yeah. Exactly. Especially when you look at this thing and it's telling you to move people ahead in this
super
funnel.
Messed up,
and you're like, where am I moving them to?
Right. If you ever like if you tried it, it just doesn't fit. It's like squares, round thing, it doesn't work.
Yeah. So I think Airtable is probably really cool. Yeah. I've just used Google Sheets because I can pick it up on my phone and just kind of jot some things down on it. Yeah. Hey.
Yeah. Could you just, what stage is the Tribe of Five website? Like, is there a platform? You have some plans how you want to evolve the platform?
Yeah. Yeah, Tribe of Five, right. Yeah, it is so far going to be an iPhone app, and we have not released to the App Store yet. So we've run a couple rounds of private betas and we're distributed over Fabric. And in the next few weeks, we need to build some more onboarding experiences before we get it into the App Store. The idea is that it'll fundamentally be a mobile platform. And the key to all these things is kind of counterintuitive. It's the push notification. So what we've seen is that people actually look forward to this push notification. It's super weird, but it's four other people in your group who have committed to do something that you've also committed to. So each time that they do it, it's that subtle reminder like, oh, Jessica, she read today. I got to read today. And so we are focused on that mobile platform for the foreseeable future. Fabric is, think of it as like an app store for developers. It's a private way for me to get the app onto your phone without going through the Apple Store review process. And so you don't have to build out as much and you can just distribute it to people. It's more cumbersome to get it onto people's phones. It's like a back and forth process where you permission their device, make a build for them. But for testing purposes, it's great because it can, I can load a new build. We can push it out to people right away.
And is there a set of interests that you want to align with people there or is it as broad as people are joining?
Yeah, we'll add on over time. When we launch, our idea is that we'll have a 30-day reading challenge, and then quickly followed after that will be a 30-day cleaning challenge, and then a 30-day meditation challenge. And so the idea for us isn't to be the content side of it, like how do you actually meditate? What do you do? We'll push you over to things like Headspace. This will be sort of like the accountability side of things, that you did do it and you're letting your group know about it.
Strange, I'm sitting here now actually. I'm doing very similar platform and I was just hiking in the wilderness in Nicaragua for 2 weeks and I was supposed to go back home in Paris and like, let's take a stop over New York and I stopped here for 20 hours and I was like, let's see what meetup is going on and I'll see this thing. And like, okay, before going to airport, I'm going to jump here and see what's going on.
I feel so amazed. Let's... Let's talk afterwards. Maybe we can have an opportunity to work together. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Hey.
You talked a lot about like peer-to-peer, like peer relationships, and also you know these guys who are years into their businesses and getting learnings from them.
Mm-hmm.
What is your view about like mentorships and menteeships? Do you do are you looking for a mentor in this stage of your game? Do you do
mentor people?
Yeah.
I have honestly mixed feelings about mentor-mentee relationships. I kind of treat it like marriage. And so sometimes people be like, will you be my mentor? And I'm like, I don't really know what that means. I don't know where you're really going. I want to help you out. But like if someone just came up to me and said, let's get married, I'd be like, yo, that's a little bit weird, right? It's just too much commitment. You know, I've had a mentor in the past when I was at Goldman. Someone said like, hey, this person's going to be your mentor. And I never knew what to do with it. And it was completely my fault. And so I'd show up and be like, so what do you want to talk about today? So I certainly didn't use it well. I have heard that a lot of people really rely on mentors and mentees. The way that I think about my mentors are super, super successful people that I don't personally know, but I find ways to tap into their knowledge. A lot of these guys like, let's say Tim Ferriss and Gary Vaynerchuk and whoever else, they all have podcasts and they all have really interesting things. So I walk around and I plug in my headphones and it's almost like I'm a fly in the room sitting and listening to dissect their philosophies and their viewpoints. And over time, I think that that has served the purposes of what I need out of a mentor. Yeah.
So this is kind of related. So within a community, there'll be levels of experience. If you are reaching out to people, or when you do interact with people, how does that level within the community affect how you interact with them? Like someone who's like just joining a running community versus someone who's done like ultra marathon or something. Like how does
That's a really good question. I think it's really community specific. So I happen to know the running community pretty well. And if you wanted to reach out to one of the top runners, they're pretty open to meet with you. But in the VC community, it's a different game. So I don't think it hurts to try, but you're going to have to try harder because the higher up status that this person is within any community, the more people are probably reaching out to them. So you have to find some way to break through to them. So another strategy could be to go through someone that then knows them and to do a two-hop process. Hey.
So in this whole process, to essentially tap into a network that you're not a part of,
mm-hmm.
you would essentially go through someone who is a part of that network and ask them or, you know, have them usher you into that group.
Yeah.
But if you didn't have that person,
mm-hmm.
would it be beneficial to figure out who within that network? Like, for example, like LinkedIn, you have these groups.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're a part of a group, do you take a deep dive of, like, all of the members in there and figure out who to shuffle through?
Yeah.
Or is it one of those kind of be like a fly on the wall and figure out where you should land?
Now, is this community something that's a common interest for you, or is, got it. So I'm sure you probably know somebody who knows somebody, or you can find an online way to break through. Like, for instance, on Reddit, there's an entrepreneurship subreddit. And even though I don't know anyone, I can post on there, I can comment, I can engage, and find like a back door to build an interaction where then later I'm like, hey man, can I get your email? Can I exchange information with you? And then you go from there. I don't know that I would go through a list of like hundreds of people. That's a lot of work. Because like, for instance, when I did it with Steve, I probably spent a couple hours reading through his blogs and listening to interviews that he's been part of. And so it does take work. And so maybe the approach is to go with someone who has a blog and they're posting and writing about their thoughts. And so you comment and you start up a dialogue and then go from there.
Friends, we're part of similar groups,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know their reach within that group.
Mm.
If they have, you know, common connections, or there's
everybody's
just essentially flies on the wall trying to figure out where to land.
Yeah,
if somebody actually had a sustainable, you know, contact within that group.
Yeah,
because LinkedIn, you have to go, oh well, you know, who are you connected to? Who are they connected to? That's common, and it can be time-consuming and not really.
Yeah. Yeah, it is a time-consuming process. The relationship game is not something that like you can just kind of do for a few minutes and then expect to get these huge results. So, yeah. So, yeah, no, I think that you're thinking about it the right way, but maybe like try it sideways. So some of those people in that community, whatever. What's the community?
Real estate community.
Real estate community. Okay, well, check this out. I used to work at Compass, which is real estate. So let's talk afterwards. Maybe somehow I can help you out. Yeah, but otherwise, like real estate agents, they are always, always open to connect with new people because they're always thinking about new business and new things. And so that's a great way to really just reach out to any of them and say, hey, can I get coffee with you? Hey.
Do you have any stats or data that show that if you have an accountability buddy, you will meet your goals more than if you do it on your own?
Yeah, the empirical data that we have based on our testing of Tribe of Five, and what we've seen early, and keep in mind this is a small data set, is that people, when they commit to this 30-day challenge, they're pulling through 23 out of the 30 days. So that's like five and a half times per week that they're doing it. So whether it's reading or journaling or something else, right? With that said, there are a lot of studies out there that show how much people fall off from their New Year's resolutions and goals. And it's something like 90% of people, some great number. And so our data early on is showing us that something's working. Hey.
So seems, I mean, you've mentioned a couple of times the goals that that people use or use your site for,
mm-hmm.
reading, writing, etc.
Yeah.
Are there some outlier goals that people have wanted that you just haven't been able to find a community for, etc.?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Can you name some of those that would be interesting?
Yeah. Well. Maybe I'll roundabout try to answer this. So as we build Tribe of Five, we're taking a very opinionated stance. So most habit apps that you look at, you go in there and it says, what habit do you want to build? And you could just do anything. And I'll ask you, how many days a week do you want to do it? And you set the parameters. How long do you want to do it for? And you set the parameters. With Tribe, we're taking the opposite approach. We're prescribing some things and saying, here's a reading challenge. If you want to join this reading challenge, we're suggesting it be 30 minutes a day, and we're suggesting you do it every single day. Now, you may say, like, on Sundays, I refuse to read. That's fine. But the goal is to make progress every single day. And so over time, we'll roll out challenges based on the feedback that we're hearing. And the big thing that people are asking for is, like, I want to create my own. But we're very wary of that, because then you can get this, like, really polluted environment where there's a lot of people who have similar. Like, I want to read 20 minutes a day. I want to read 40 minutes a day. But, like, in our mind, like, you could work together on that. So we're trying to really control that experience.
Thanks for listening to the Product Podcast. If you liked this episode, don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes. If you want to know more about our courses and next cohorts, visit productschool.com. Stay tuned for the next episode to learn more about the secrets in product management.